There's an inpatient ward at Bellevue Hospital. There's also the nation's largest collection of negative pressure cells, clinical cells left over from the TB epidemic over in the West facility called the Communicable Disease Unit, about 70 or 75 cells that can be used. These are rooms that people are put in for observation. I will say that there's more resource skills and smarts at Rikers Island in the health service than any other health service in the country. But those folks who run that service have told us what we need to listen to, which is you have to get these patients who are at risk off the island and out of the system. And it's true all over the country.
Homer Venters, want to thank you for being with us. There's so much more to talk about, and we will. In the corporate media, the only reason they're talking about jails is because Harvey Weinstein, apparently, at Wendy Prison, has reportedly tested positive for COVID-19. Homer Venters is former chief medical officer for New York City's Correctional Health Services, author of Life and Death in Rikers Island. I want to thank the miraculous, amazing Democracy Now! Team for all of their work at home and here. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio is supported by our members and by AMR, who would like you to know the warning signs of a heart attack. Common symptoms are pain in the chest, arms, or jaw, lightheadedness, and shortness of breath. Calling 911 as soon as you see the signs can save a life.
Tuned into KBOO Community Radio. The time is 8 o'clock, which means it is time for the talk block. We got Abe and Joe since it's Tuesday, and they are waiting remotely on the line for you. So stay tuned here at 8 o'clock, Abe and Joe Talk Radio.
KBOO Portland.
Attention, KBOO volunteers. This is an all-hands-on-deck announcement. As of Friday, March 13th at 10 p.m., our station is closed to all volunteer activities. Only staff will be allowed in the building. If you're a program host, we need your help remotely. Even though we're closing the front door for 30 days to reduce the spread of infection, our airwaves still need you. Please pre-record your show and submit your audio to your director. If you have any questions or need assistance, please email staff. Information about KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic is available on our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19. Thank you for helping to keep our airwaves up to date and engaging for our listeners who need your voice now more than ever. Together, we'll be able to get through this. Oh yeah, and don't forget to wash your hands. Listening to KBOO Community Radio. It's time for Abe and Joe. Are you guys there on the phone?
We are.
We
good
are
morning.
Here.
Good morning. All right,
good morning.
Take it away.
Good morning.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. What's new?
Well, I'm sheltered in place.
So am I. So am I, sir. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. We are broadcasting you from deep, deep underground in our virus bunkers, and we hope wherever you are safe and you are healthy.
Yeah, we really are. I want to tell people that they probably can reach us at 231-8187. But, Abe, you have a guest for us?
I do. I have a guest for us. We have not yet received the green light that he is on the air, but we are going to be joined very shortly by an old friend of mine. His name is Ben. He is a frontline healthcare worker in a Portland emergency department.
I see. So, he's going to be incognito, kind of.
That's right. Yeah. He has asked that we protect his anonymity and that of his employer. So we are going to honor that request. Ben is going to give us an idea of what emergency departments in the area are looking at right now, what they're anticipating over the next couple of weeks, and is also going to talk about what their most prominent pressure points are expected to be, meaning what exactly is threatens to impinge their work the most.
Well, I think that's great, but you know what? The idiot in chief wants to end the shelter-in-place effort.
Yeah, I've noticed that. At least he's making noise like that. There's some language going around on the right saying we don't want the cure to be worse than the disease. And we even have people like the Lieutenant Governor of Texas suggesting that old people would gladly sacrifice themselves if it meant saving the American economy for their grandchildren.
No.
As someone with grandchildren, Joe, how do you feel about that?
No. I'm not going to sacrifice
really?
Myself pointlessly for capitalism. That's crazy.
I think you're insufficiently patriotic, Joe.
I'm insufficiently patriotic? Well, you know, I've been insufficiently patriotic since I was 12.
Okay, well, at least you're consistent.
Yeah, I'm consistently insufficiently patriotic. The last war I supported was World War II, and I was just, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Right. We have a lot of, unsurprisingly, a lot of misinformation coming out of the White House. The president, for example, is now pushing actively a combination of drugs, hydroxychloroquine, apologies for pronunciation, and azithromycin, which taken in combination, he's saying have miracle results against COVID-19. Needless to say, this is totally unproven, completely untrue. And we're even getting reports out of Nigeria of people being poisoned because they're self-medicating with this stuff.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah, so this,
I mean, this guy is, he is treasonous and should have been and still should be kicked out of office.
Yeah, absolutely should be called out of office. Joe, I'm going to ask you to carry the load here just for a second while we deal with our phone-in guests. Can you
sure.
handle that for a sec?
All right. Of course. I'll be glad to do that. I really want to emphasize the fact that in a modern industrial nation where there's all sorts of resources, we are watching a Republican and Democratic fundamentally stupid argument going on in Congress. All the money that should be spent right now should be spent on helping with the virus and helping people who need money because they're out of work. Instead, there's just all kinds of arguments about how much money should go to the rich. This is a classic example of the kind of capitalism that is not needed at this time and will hurt our country in the long run, even in the short run. It's incredibly stupid. Meanwhile, I understand people were hanging out at the beach, going looking at the flowers, all this stuff, ignoring the very real danger of the coronavirus. And I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, I thought people were grown up, but I guess that's not quite true. And I'm very disturbed because at the top, there's a guy who has no knowledge of anything. I'm not exaggerating. He doesn't read a book. He doesn't know science. He doesn't know medicine. He doesn't know art. He doesn't know literature. He doesn't know the interactions of human beings. He doesn't know the stars in the sky. He doesn't know the earth below his feet. He is, in fact, only about himself, and himself is ugly. So I'm just really, really angry. It was amusing at first, a little bit horrifying, but now with the whole population at some risk, this guy is not fulfilling any of the responsibilities that go with being president of the United States. Oh, I coughed. Oh, that's a bad sign. Uh-oh.
There's that patriotism.
Yeah. I'm gonna die in my home, cursing the president. That sounds really bad.
I know that's how you always wanted to go out, Joe.
Yeah, no, I had a much more romantic picture, but that would have disgraced a lot of people. So what the hell?
Okay, I think we have got our guest ready. Again, this is Ben. He is in the emergency department at a Portland area. He's a frontline healthcare worker in the Portland area emergency department.
Well,
Ben, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Morning.
Yeah,
hey.
I think you should take the lead with Ben because I don't know the guy.
Well, I do know the guy. Hey, man, thank you for joining us this morning. Sorry about the technical snafu there at the beginning.
No worries.
We appreciate your time. So the first thing I'm interested in knowing is how much of an impact right now is your emergency department seeing from COVID-19?
Well, we're certainly seeing patients that we have a high suspicion for, although the testing is just really not available, and that's one of the major fails of this whole thing is the inability to test. But you know, we go on, we take care of people with the best of our ability and try and make the best decisions to keep everybody safe, including our staff and other patients. And then, you know, a lot of our regular emergency department travel and visits have been impacted. People are staying home, I think, for things that they otherwise would have visited the emergency department for. But, you know, there's real emergencies that are still happening that we still have to take care of.
Well, so, I've got a hangnail that could use some treatment, you know?
Yeah, you're out of luck, Joe.
People come in for that, you know?
Really?
So, yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, people come in for, you know, some of the most minor things. So, you know, I think people are heeding the warnings and staying away for that reason and for some of those more minor complaints. But we're definitely seeing an uptick in people with bad pneumonia. Sometimes we're able to rule out COVID by ruling them in for something else, like bacterial pneumonia. And there's different patterns of pneumonia that we're looking for. But really, the only people we're testing is people who were admitting to the hospital who have ruled out for the flu and other respiratory illnesses. We're then able to send tests off on them, but then we have to wait 3 or 4 days. So that's
the reality of testing right now in Oregon, is that you're not going to receive a COVID-19 test unless you're in an emergency department and you have ruled out any number of other possible infections.
And you're getting admitted to the hospital, yeah, pretty much.
And you're being admitted.
Yeah. We're not testing you. So we
could the possibility.
See have a high.
Go ahead.
Could see somebody have a high suspicion that they, you know, could have COVID, but they're well-ish and they're able to take care of themselves at home. We send them home. There's no way to test them.
So isn't this total failure of the government of the United States?
Yeah, at a federal and state level, that's what it feels like. Yeah, a failure.
So if you had, if we had the ability to test at a much larger scale, then you guys would be able to much more effectively triage, and in turn, we would collectively have a much more accurate picture of just how many people are infected at the moment.
Yeah, the turnaround time on the test is really not fast enough for us to calculate it into our triage. But, you know, we could definitely keep the gate of the hospital a little neater if we were able to test people. You know, this mythical unicorn of a 45-minute test that they talk about, that I'll believe it when I see it. But that would certainly help. I think we're weeks away from that. They've been saying for weeks now that we're going to be able to test, you know, anybody we need to and all this. We're just not seeing it. We're able to test about 150 to 200 people a day in the entire state of Oregon. That's all the state can do. So failure on the state level, failure on the federal level, you know, just not enough. It's like we're going around with a paper bag over our head trying
to
navigate.
Would that help keep you from getting the virus if you had a paper bag over your head?
It probably wouldn't hurt, but I wouldn't recommend it.
So I have another question. What about masks? What about gowns? What about the things to protect the people who are helping people who may be sick?
Yeah, personal protective equipment is a thing. There's a shortage. The other thing about testing is that would help us use our personal protective equipment more efficiently and effectively. Yeah, we're trying. It's a balance right now between overreacting and using the highest level of PPE that we have on somebody who's not sick, and trying to protect our frontline healthcare workers from not getting sick, so that later when we're in the thick of it and things are deep, we have all the things we need. At my spot, we're pretty good on the PPE. We've been getting a lot of donations, which is definitely appreciated. I imagine that we're going to use pretty much every single glove, mask, and gown that has been donated, plus all the stuff that we have. I know that some of the other hospital systems in the Portland metro area are in more dire straits than we are. I've talked to some folks who work at some other health systems, and they say, wow, we are really thin here, and we're not even in the thick of it yet. So I'm worried about some of the other frontline workers and some of the other spots. And you know, it's kind of hard to say how long our PPE supplies are going to last. Are we going to get anything from the federal government? Are we going to get anything from the state? You'd think we'd have stockpiles of some of this stuff. Well, you also look at the level of PPE that we have compared to what you see in Italy or China, and the suits and things that they're wearing in other places. You know, the CDC has made some recommendations that are kind of wild as far as, oh, use a bandana. That's just, you know, that's kind of crazy. This is not something a bandana is going to stop.
Well, so, if I understand correctly, there's a curve to this virus that is consistent if it's not interrupted. And it's going up very steeply. And the goal, the fundamental goal, because we don't have a cure or even a medicine to ameliorate it, is to keep that curve down so that over a long period of time, fewer people are getting the disease, fewer people are dying of the disease, and in the end, the disease isolates itself and disappears. Now, that isn't happening. The opposite is happening. It's like Italy. It's climbing fast. Is that true?
Yeah, flattening the curve is definitely what we want to do, and that's definitely what all of asking everybody to stay home is about, is flattening the curve. But we are already outpacing Italy on the slope of the curve that is starting to develop here in the United States. Now, the curve here on the West Coast and in specifically Oregon and California and Washington is kind of messed up because of testing. If we had many, many more tests, our numbers would look different. Now, New York looks a little more like Italy in that curve, but I mean, without the testing, we don't have the data, and we can't track this. So, our curve, I mean, I'm looking at all the numbers coming out of California, Oregon, and Washington, and I'm pretty much adding a multiplier of 100 to 1,000.
Really?
You can pretty much, in my mind, when I look at the statistics and I look at the curve and I look at what's probably really there that we can't see because we're not testing, I would say, you know, multipliers, add some zeros.
Wow.
If you really want to.
So you're saying that the real situation is orders of magnitude greater in your estimation than what you're seeing right now.
Yeah. Other places are testing hundreds and thousands of more people than we are. No?
Right. Okay. So I want to touch on Italy again, because they seem to model our infectious curve the most closely. Now, you mentioned a second ago that you're worried about the levels of your PPE supplies because you're not even in the thick of things yet. So I want to ask you, given that estimates indicate that we're about 10 days to 14 days behind Italy in terms of the impact on our healthcare system, what is it that you are anticipating over the next week to 2 weeks? And what do you expect to be, what are the pressure points in your healthcare delivery system here? What's going to be strained the most?
Yeah, certainly our ICU capacity is going to be maxed out. You know, our ICUs in the Portland metro area run at 80 to 90% of capacity most days, and these are precious resources, and we hold patients in the emergency department that need to go to the ICU every day. And so once the ICUs fill up, all the emergency departments are going to fill up, and then you know, that's going to spill out into tents that most of the hospitals have put out in the parking lot. So
hospitals themselves are putting tents in the parking lot.
Yeah. That's a good thing,
I suppose. But have you heard anything, for example, from the Department of Defense, who specializes in this sort of thing?
No. I know that down in Salem, the National Guard is setting up a field hospital. So I'm not sure what capacity that's going to have, or if that's going to treat COVID patients or the regular population of patients. I'm not sure what their plan is for that.
certainly up here in Portland, myself and other people that work at other hospitals, I haven't heard about any help from the state or federal government.
So it's ICU capacity you believe that's going to be the critical choke point going forward?
Oh yeah, definitely. ICU capacity, ventilators, and then staff. So if our staff get taken out by the virus, they, you know, can't work. So those are the things. And PPE is going to be a choke point, but really ICU capacity and ventilators, the machines, these are complex machines. I mean, you can't just crank them out of a factory in an afternoon. It's, you know, there are hundreds, right, if not thousands of components in these machines. They're like a car. I mean, many, many little parts. They do make some simpler ones that are portable and kind of disposable. There's talk that 1,000 ventilators are coming to Oregon from somewhere, but I haven't seen one yet. And at this point, all the talk I've heard over the last several weeks, I don't believe anything until I have it in my hand. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, this all of this from the top looks like what's called disaster capitalism. That is, people are using this opportunity to get more money rather than to help people.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really disagree with that. I do think that lots of people are donating stuff to the hospitals, which I think is kind of ironic, right? We have these hospitals and this healthcare system, and people are, you know, giving PPE, you know, to the hospitals. Seems like the government should be able to help out with that. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people that want to help, so that's good. Yeah, somebody's going to make money off of it. And I'll tell you, it's probably going to be corporations, right? So some way, somehow, the corporations are going to figure out a way to make the money. You know, the same corporations that replace all the stars on the flag, when you look at who's really running the country, you could basically just replace all the stars on the flag with corporate logos, you know, of all the top 50 countries and companies. And those are the ones that are probably going to benefit from this somehow.
So if you are one of those members of the public who would like to help you and your colleagues out, what would be the most effective way to do that?
I think you could just bring the PPE to, you know, whatever hospital is close to you. I would say, you know, pick the closest one so you don't have to travel far. And then, you know, make sure that you might want to call ahead and to let them know you have some so you can take it to a drop point and minimize any exposure. You also may be able to get a donation receipt. So that could be a motivator too. But, you know, really we're not supposed to be going anywhere right now. So if you got some really critical PPE, if you got a big box of N95 masks or something like that,
what's the likelihood of that?
If you've got one or two of them, you know, hang on to it. You might need it yourself. But if you got a big stockpile, or you own a construction company and you got a bunch of respirators, or you've, you know, got something that a high volume and could really be impactful, I'm sure that any hospital near you would want to have that.
I think one thing we really want to emphasize over and over again is people have to be sheltered in place. You can take a walk by yourself outside a little bit, but not getting close to people. You need to stay home and to have supplies either brought to you or use the system that the supermarkets are using, which is imperfect but helpful. If you're an older person, from 8 to 9 in the morning, you can go to a lot of the stores, New Seasons, all of those kind of stores, the alternative to the big Safeways and so on. But I think Safeway is doing it as well. You can go in there, you can make your purchases of what you really need in the way of stuff, not toilet paper, and then you can go home and this is the classic example of where people should be fearful and they should be huddling in place.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's
stay home, please.
Go ahead.
Please, stay home.
Go ahead.
We need to flatten the curve here, so do stay home, take it seriously. I mean, it's that simple. You've got one job right now, stay home.
Well, you know, speaking for those of us in Generation X, we're being asked to stay home and watch cable TV and play video games. This is the moment we have been training for our whole lives, Generation X. We can do this. Listen, Ben, I'm sure that you've got a lot of more pressing business. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. I know you're heading into what will probably be the most challenging period of your career. So we wish you nothing but the best.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are one of the frontline heroes in this struggle, and I know that was not your intention, but there you are.
Yeah, here I am. So, you know, we're going to work today so that you guys can stay home, and that's all we're asking right now is just stay home. If you have any PPE, think about donating it, and otherwise, everybody stay well. We'll get through this one way or another. Hopefully, we're not going to lose too many people. So, we'll see.
All right, Ben.
Yeah, thanks
well, you,
a lot.
Well, take care of yourself. Please pass on our thanks and our appreciation to your colleagues, and we'll have a pint when this is all done.
All right, I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, take care, man.
All right.
Well,
take care.
Abe, you have young children.
I do.
And I guess I want to ask a simple but maybe very relevant question. How do you handle a household that is totally isolated from the rest of the world?
Well, right now we're keeping them in shackles in the basement, and we're pushing trays of food through the door on a regular basis. No, we're trying to be creative. And I don't mean this in any malicious way towards you, Joe, or members of your generation. It is reassuring as a parent to know that your young children are not likely to be seriously impacted by this virus.
Well, I'm not sure that's absolutely true. There's data now beginning to question whether children can be carriers, and there are other issues involved.
Oh, well, your children can absolutely be carriers. I think we've known that from pretty early on. But the chances of extreme sickness and death amongst the young are much less than they are amongst the aged.
Wait a minute. I'm not young.
No, you need to stay home, man. No going to the grocery store for you. Seriously.
Wow.
Take advantage of a delivery service. I kid you not. Okay. You don't want to mess around with this. All right. So you're asking, how do we get through the day? We're having to be creative. It was easier before it started raining again. We were spending a lot of time in the backyard, kids playing while my wife and I did some yard work and gardening projects. We've been working in bike rides because that's a safe thing to do as long as you observe a safe perimeter between yourself and other groups of people. We've been taking walks. That's also permissible, provided you observe social distancing protocols.
What is the appropriate distance for two people outside?
What I've heard from the CDC and others is a perimeter of at least 6 feet, preferably 10. You see somebody, give them a wide berth, wave to them, say hello, and pass right on by. What you want to avoid doing is, getting together with some friends and going on a bike ride in a tight knot of people. You still want to segregate your household or yourself if you live alone. You keep yourselves different from other groups of people, other households.
Well, this is this is not good for business.
No, it's really not good for business, and I think that's at the heart of what the rumblings we're hearing from the president himself, who has resisted any sort of significant anti-transmission measure from the outset. We should note. That's what's prompting the outcry from him and from others. Oh, we can't do this. We're going to crash the whole economy for generations. This is going to be terrible. Well, this is terrible from an economic standpoint. I don't know that the economy has ever experienced such a dramatic slowdown in this shortest span of time. I could be wrong about that, but I believe it to be true. And it's the damage that's being caused right now economically is going to take a long time to come back from. There's a lot of small businesses who have shut their doors that are never going to open them again, regardless of what help may come through from the federal government. Now, that being said, that means that whatever help does come through from the federal government, it needs to be robust. It needs to be it needs to benefit workers rather than owners primarily. And now by owners, I mean owners of very large multinational corporations. If you're an owner of the Thai food restaurant down the street, then absolutely you need robust support from the government. But most of that aid should target working people. And I know that there's been a lot of controversy between the two parties in Congress as they've been hammering out this relief bill. So I'm going to offer some help right now, okay? Here it is. Carve out as much money as you need to get Americans through this. Tax rich people for it. There's your bill. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks to me like it's time to tax the rich.
Yeah, it is absolutely time to tax the rich. You know, and I'm hearing lots of things right now about how $62 billion bailout for the airline industry was the last figure that I heard. Now, things like this should be absolute non-starters. And here's why. The airline industry has spent the last decade feathering its nest. It's been a very liquid and very prosperous time for the airline industry, and they have taken all of their free capital, virtually all of it, and used it for stock buybacks to boost shareholder value and to pay big bonuses to executives. So right now, if you're an airline, and this is what you've been doing for the past 10 years, you don't get a dime of taxpayer money. The Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates to almost zero. So here's what you do if you're an airline. You use your assets as collateral, and you borrow money at rock-bottom rates, and you use that to get through this. You do not deserve a taxpayer bailout. If we are going to have the government come to the rescue of people, then those people need to be working people. If you're United Airlines, if you're Delta, tough luck. You've got assets, you've got ready money, you figure it out.
Well, what seems incredible to me, really, is the obstinance and absolute deliberate ignorance, and I have to say this, largely of the Republican Party. There are fools in the Democratic Party, too, of course, but the Republican Party people in Congress are absolutely on the most unpatriotic, vicious opportunists that I have ever experienced, and I've been around a while.
That's a bold statement.
Well, it's true.
Yeah. So we need to really take these calls to throw open the doors of the economy again and get back to business as usual. We really need to take these things with a shaker of salt. What you're hearing from the conservatives right now, and really this is right in line with their ideology. They're saying, grandma and grandpa be damned. Let's get the economy up and running again. This is worth it. So all you people 65 and older who make up the bulk of Fox News's viewing audience, now you know what your party really thinks about you.
Well, there's an irony there. They may kill all their audience.
Yes, exactly it. Jack writes into the show. Oh, by the way, you can reach us on the phone now, 503-231-8187. You can also write into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe. Jack writes in to say, Abe mentioned shackling kids in the basement. Seems the powers that shouldn't be want us all home shackled to the TVs, which feed us all the news that's fit to consume. There's a grain of truth in that, but I think that's a pretty cynical view right now. You just heard Ben, a frontline emergency department worker. You know, we need to stay home. This is why we need to stay home to flatten that infection curve. This is the only way, absent large-scale testing and capacity for treatment and eventually vaccine, absent any of those things, this is the only way that we slow the growth of this infection.
Well, you know, I mean, to me, the most disgustingly ironic thing about this is that the Trump administration did a right way with the pandemic of section of the U.S. government that the Obama administration put in place after the various scares previous to this one.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think this is part of Trump's larger pathology to systematically do away with everything that the Obama administration put in place.
Absolutely.
Now, I know as progressives, we view the Obama administration as a mixed bag at best. But clearly we're seeing the folly in this sort of short-term thinking, this sort of petty behavior motivated by who knows what, jealousy, bitterness, racism. I don't know, but I certainly think we'd be
definitely an element. But this guy, this is the most stupid, egotistical, ignorant president we've ever had. And I study and teach history. This is really amazing. And the fact that so many people, I don't know, 20% to 40% of Americans fall for this guy is an indication of the hidden rage in the working class in America and in the older people in America.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. He really is the worst possible person to have in the big chair at this moment.
Yeah.
We literally could not pick a worse person. Now, please don't misunderstand me, and I think you're probably coming from the same place, Joe. We're not arguing that had Obama's pandemic response team remained in place that everything would be hunky-dory right now. No, that's not the case. There'd be better. There's nobody who could have stopped the spread of this virus from China to the rest of the world. The patterns of human travel and behavior being what they are, there's no way that we could have stopped that. The best we could hope for under the most ideal circumstances is to be able to mitigate first the spread of disease and then hopefully have enough treatment capacity so that those who get very sick don't cross the line and die. It's a problem of mitigation and stripping us of all of our preparedness, virtually all of our preparedness, contributes to the situation we're in now. And as Ben mentioned, we are not even in the thick of it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, all of us now are talking before the curve goes really high. And it's going to go really high because there's nothing to stop it.
No, there isn't anything to stop it. And frankly, people have not behaved particularly well. This past weekend, the governor had not yet issued a stay-at-home order. I'm not putting this on her plate, although personally I think that order should have come sooner. You had people flocking to the coast, to Seaside. I read some accounts on social media of some locals who work in Seaside just full of bitterness and anger at these stupid people coming to their town, spreading this infection, and partying on the beach like it's a regular spring break. Now, people need to understand that life is not normal right now. Human behavior is not going to be bound by its, our typical strictures. Things are much, much different, and we all need to make that switch in mindset, whatever we need to do to get through this.
And I'm thinking to a great extent of the weirdness. I can't help but think of the weirdness that I see on TV. Being stuck here, I watch much more news than I usually do, much more news than probably good for me, but I am watching this president insisting on being at these news conferences where the health professionals should be running the show. And he gets up there and says something incredibly stupid, contradicting the science, contradicting the facts of the matter. And then his little servant, the vice president, gives a more nuanced version of that. And I watch the healthcare professionals just staring like they've been shot in the face at this insanity, and I get very depressed, and I really don't understand how people who ostensibly should know better are doing what they're doing. Their ideology overruns, and I guess this is not uncommon in history, overruns their intellect.
Here I think we're seeing one of the corollary effects of having somebody like Trump in office. We know that he has not appointed skilled career professionals to high-level cabinet positions, or deputy cabinet positions in fields in which they have expertise.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of his cronies overseeing large federal organizations, and they have no idea what they're doing or what those organizations are supposed to be doing. This is what happens when you have a lack of expertise and when you have the sort of mass defections of talented, committed professionals that we've seen under the Trump administration. The guy I really feel sorry for is Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's up there on the podium with Trump every day. He wasn't there yesterday?
No.
Oh, boy, I wonder if they've gotten rid of him. Yeah, that's a shame. I really feel for that guy. You could see it in his face. Every time Trump says something stupid, he just cringes. And I bet he's feeling like, I would love to not have to work for this guy, but if I quit, then who is there? You can't
really
count on the Trump administration to appoint somebody competent to take his place.
And the woman who's often there, doctor, I can't remember her name, she also looks incredibly embarrassed. Yesterday she was blinking and just acting like she couldn't believe what the president was saying, but there she stood. I think she thinks that she can help block Trump's stupidity to some degree. That's why she's still there.
Yeah, and that's why we need her and we need Dr. Fauci to stay there and keep pushing back as hard as they can. What a thankless, horrible job, but I'm grateful that they're there. David writes into the show to say, hey guys, regarding hospital tents, etc., I was at a physical therapy appointment last week at a clinic adjacent to Peace Health Southwest Hospital in Vancouver, and the therapist had me look out his window to where three large trees had just been felled to make way for tents necessary to combat the epidemic. Mm. So there's preparation happening, such as it is. I never thought I would utter these words, Joe, but I want the Army to come in and set up some mobile hospitals.
Well, this is what the National Guard and the regular armed forces of the United States have been trained to do for combat, but it also works really well in the situation we're talking about. And it's one of the things we actually have that can be set up in days.
Yes. And battlefield medicine as practiced by the U.S. military is incredibly sophisticated. Some of the propositions that I've read around this say that ideally we would see the military and FEMA come in and set up mobile hospitals, and that would be where the regular hospital traffic goes, and COVID-19 patients would be shunted into the existing hospitals, intensive care units, and emergency rooms that have even more sophisticated equipment and are better staffed. So we're looking at, in the best case scenario, building tent hospitals for non-infected people. That's the sort of capacity crisis we're looking at right now.
Yeah, but doing this rational triage, which is what we're describing, mm-hmm. is virtually impossible because, and I can't believe this, but it's true, the leadership at the top of the United States government is venal and stupid and ignorant and absolutely looking after the richest of the rich if they're looking after anybody.
Yeah, precisely. And more and more, they're coming out and saying, hey, we don't care. Throw open the doors to everything again.
Yeah,
like, this
is so
nihilism. I, it's really hard to even accurately put into words just how nihilistic that sort of position is. Really, if we were to do that, if we were to reopen the economy in a week or so, the way the president is calling on us to do, untold thousands more people will die as a result.
Well, and the country will be, in fact, seriously crippled consequently. I think that, you know, I don't know the whole image of the president being impeached and you know, and all that political farce was perhaps premature. Maybe this is the crime against humanity for which this guy should be kicked out of office.
Well, at this point, I think you can pick your crime, but...
yeah, there's lots of crimes.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this sort of thing and this level of incompetence on public display, it's hard to imagine an elected official surviving it. That said, I mean, this is Donald Trump and all the regular rules don't seem to apply to him. So we'll see what happens. Can I talk a little economics 101 for a minute?
Please.
Okay. Those of you who've listened to this show for any amount of time know that I'm an admirer of the great economist John Maynard Keynes. Keynes was the founder of the Keynesian School of Economics, which espouses, broadly speaking, that the best way to help a society through a period of prolonged economic distress is through stimulating the demand side of the economy. This was a philosophy that undergirded President Roosevelt's New Deal programs and his response to the Great Depression. The idea being that if you put money in the hands of people, if you give people jobs, ideally, or in a situation like we're facing today, if you simply give them money, then they're able to keep that money circulating in their communities. Maybe businesses that might have had to shut their doors can stay open. People as individuals and households can make their ends meet. And all this money circulating around helps keep everybody afloat. It's demand side stimulus, and it works. And it's been proven to work time and again. It was also the philosophy that undergirded President Obama's National Recovery Act after the economic collapse of 2008. So there's something called, in Keynesian economics, called the paradox of thrift. Have you heard of this, Joe?
No. Well, actually,
no,
the
paradox
go
of,
ahead. Go ahead.
The paradox of thrift talks about what happens if people make rational decisions in a time of crisis. For example, right now, you as an individual, Joe, looking out for you and your family, might make a series of decisions that make perfect sense from your perspective. you might stock up on supplies. You might decide to be frugal. You say, all right, I'm going to hoard my money. I'm not going to spend it. I'm going to save it because who knows how bad things are going to get. I might really need this money. That's a perfectly rational decision for you to make. But if everybody in a community makes the same decision, decides to be thrifty in a time of crisis, then you can see how that would collectively have a disastrous effect on the economy. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Right. This is the paradox of thrift. Ironically and counterintuitively, the best thing that people can do at a time like this is to keep spending money, preferably at local family-owned businesses. You know, if you're wondering what to have for dinner tonight and that Thai food place down the street that I mentioned earlier is doing takeout, Keynesian economics says to you, go get some takeout from that Thai place. Or, you know, keep shopping for your food items on a regular basis. Don't just spend a bunch all at once and hoard. Keep circulating your money like you would in more normal times. Now, that said, we still have to abide by social distancing protocols and all the precautions that we need to be taking right now. But above all, it's so important that we keep spending money in our communities to the extent possible.
So,
and this is what makes... Go ahead. Go ahead.
Instead of buying toilet paper, I should buy a Mercedes?
No, no. And I'm saying instead of buying five huge packages of toilet paper, you buy a little toilet paper now, and then in a week, you go buy a little more toilet paper. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you want to buy a Mercedes, that's fine, but that doesn't really help your local vendors in your community.
Ah, good point.
But all of this is to say that you know, this is why the deliberations going on in Congress right now are so important and why we need to apply so much pressure. It is critically important that money be put in the hands of Americans to spend for the reasons I just outlined. Secondly, it's critically important that people who don't have sick leave guarantees are given some sort of sick leave guarantee. And this would accomplish the first objective, putting money in people's hands. So cash grants are great. Guaranteed sick time is great. Anything that puts cash money in people's hands to spend. This is what we need to see come out of whatever relief package comes out of Congress. Not bailouts for the airlines, not bailouts for banks, not more injections of capital into the securities markets. It's relief for working people, and it has to be sufficient enough to bridge us through this period of crisis. If we can do that, then the other side of this starts looking much better. And I think this is what conservatives are calling for grandma and grandpa to die are not able to see, that we just need to get through this period of the next several months. We don't know exactly how long that is going to be, but we need to give the American people whatever they need to get us all through this. And as I said earlier, the answer, tax the rich. Elizabeth Warren's 2.5% wealth tax is looking pretty good. That's the sort of thing we need to be thinking about right now.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And I'm horrified, I have to say that I'm horrified at the loss of a, I don't know what to call it, I guess a liberal, rational perspective on many, many, many parts of the political and economic elites, including, to some degree, a lot of the Democrats, and not that the Democrats are a great party exactly, but there's obviously a better understanding there right now than there is on the part of these weirdly intellectually bereft people who call themselves Republicans.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The Democrats are not perfect, but they certainly seem to have a better idea of what needs to be done.
Yeah, but you know, yes. I don't want to get into party politics because this transcends that. This is about this really goes, and I'm going to get a little bit corny here, goes to the biblical understanding of what a society ought to be.
You mean everyone should be naked? Biblical? Is that
no,
what you
no,
mean?
No. I mean everybody should be kind and gentle and clothe the poor and take care of people, and people should be helping people instead of
I know what you mean.
Running away or playing.
Mike writes into the show to say the real deprivation right now is not business, it's hugs. We're going to see a more reactive population who is deprived of social and intimate connection.
I think he's right. I mean, I find myself.
I think hugging is naughty now.
No, hugging is naughty, and that's exactly the point he's trying to make. At a certain point, we're really going to miss these things. Like, I find myself thinking about, you know, my intimate circle of friends who are, you know, are going to be strangers for the foreseeable future, you know, and I would give a lot to be able to see them and embrace them and spend a little time with them.
Hey, Abe and Joe.
It's not going to happen.
This is Jenna here in the air room. Just want to remind you all that you have a caller on the line. Just let people know that, you know, we got calls here at KBOO.
Yeah, let's
see.
The
air room is informing us that we have a telephone call. Let's go to the phones. Good morning.
Oh, we waited too long. But hey, caller, if you're there, give us a call back because they had an address where we could drop off some PPE. But we'll open up that phone line. So if you guys want to take calls, KBOO's taking calls.
Certainly. Absolutely. We'll take calls. 503-331.
I want to point out to the audience out there, we're functioning blind. We don't have all the technology, which is not the greatest, but okay, that would help us know these things. So you have to be patient, but it's really worthwhile.
And just a quick technological reminder, Abe, I'm letting you know who's on the line through the old messenger. That's how we're doing it these days. Actually, the phone's ringing right now, so we'll see what's up.
Okay.
And I also want to compliment people who are staff people who are going into the studio in this crisis. I think one of the things that I'm troubled about is people don't get it. They're not taking this thing seriously enough. This is not a head cold. This is not a stomach upset. This is a disease which will kill significant numbers of people, even if we do the best that we do. And the people most likely to die are older people. And it is really a weird tragedy that the current government is totally incapable of understanding this rational problem and dealing with it. And I'm so outraged. But, you know, all I can do is this little radio show.
All right. We've got Brian on the line. Good morning, Brian.
Oh, hi. How are you? Thanks for having the conversation. I just wanted to relay a little thing that I heard on another radio station yesterday. There's a show called Think Out Loud, and they interviewed two women. One woman was in Fossil, and she runs a cafe out there that caters to a lot of elderly people, and this was after the governor had announced the lockdown, and she was mad because she said that she served the population, let them come in and have a social space. This was very important to them, and she was mad that the governor did this. They're out there in the country. They know what to do. They know how to take care of themselves, and they don't need to be told what to do. And the interviewer was asked her, so you're advocating to bring these people together, even though they're elderly and vulnerable? And she was like, well, if they think they're well enough, they should be allowed, right? Anyway, he did a great job of maintaining through that. And then he interviewed the woman that runs Mother's Bistro, who's trying to figure out how to do takeouts and everything, and she was so intelligent and smart, and he asked her what he thought about the previous conversation, and she said, oh, my God, I can't believe I was so relieved when the governor said that, making it so everybody had to operate by the same standards. And it was just so interesting to hear a rural person and a Republican person and a Portland person in the same positions, and their take was diametrically opposed. It was just an amazing conversation.
Well, there is a rural urban divide in Oregon and many other places, but it's not consistent. Many people who live in the country are as wise or wiser than folks who live in the city. I want to avoid the stigmatizing that happens so easily in these kinds of situations. But
yeah, and let me be clear too. I am actually a farmer, and I live out on the intersection between city and the country, and I'm very well aware of what you're saying. But even that stereotype of the wise urban myth, that can also break down too. And so with the influence of Trump and that sickness, it's like it's infecting. I just couldn't believe it was just an amazing dichotomy that I got to witness on the radio.
No, that is very interesting, and it is a good symbolic example. Well, more than symbolic, it's a good example of what can be going on. one of the things that has always made me sad is that we do not educate our people well. We are not a state, a nation that really teaches true history. We teach mythology. And because we teach mythology, cause and effect get lost.
Yeah. And MAGA is a prime example of mythology just run rampant.
You mean like Make America Great Again?
Yeah, the Make America Great is mythology that's just infecting. It's causing so much damage. It's unbelievable, and it's total mythology, a history that never happened, and it's just twisting history.
Yeah, no, and it's very dangerous. There has been some really nasty behavior where people are assaulting, or criticizing, or yelling, or even spitting on people of Asian descent. This is incredible and intolerable and stupid. This is a disease. It's a disease.
And I think what we have is we have a failure of vocabulary. You just rattled off some words, and we still can't get to how bad this stuff is. I'm still searching for the words to describe how bad Trump and this mentality is. I can't find the words yet, but you're helping me.
It's really staggering, isn't it?
I'm not allowed to say some of the words I would say, but I'll just say, he's a stupid dork.
Yeah. Oh, man, Jeffrey Sachs on Democracy Now! This morning was just saying it. He was just saying it.
Yeah, he did a good job. By the way, Democracy Now! Is a very valuable resource in these times of trouble.
Oh, my God, is it ever. I wish I could get everybody to just pay attention to it a little bit. So thank you very much for your show. You guys are great. Bye.
Well, hey, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. All right, we're getting close to the end here, so we need to wrap things up.
We do.
Thank you, everybody, for bearing with us as we are attempting to fly blind here and do this show remotely. I wanted to take just a minute before the end here to point out some of the major points in the House of Representatives proposal, the counterproposal to the Senate Republicans bill, and some of the things that are in it. It increases the amount of money being offered up to individuals. These are the cash payments we're talking about. It waives $10,000 in federal student loan payments for everybody. It dedicates $4 billion in grant funding to help states cope with upcoming elections and mandates 15 days nationally of early voting and no excuse absentee vote by mail. So there's an attempt to secure an election in the face of the epidemic, which is really, really important. Right.
And people need, I don't think I have to say this to our audience because they're by and large aware, but this is really a serious problem. The way the curve climbs can be altered by your behavior, hanging out at home,
keeping
social distance. If you go for a walk, which is okay, if you encounter someone on your walk, you go out in the street, you stay at least 10 feet. I'm going to say 10 feet, not 6.
Yep.
10 feet away from them, because this can only be defeated by isolating it and by taking the sacrifice seriously.
Okay, we have Karen, our caller earlier, who couldn't get through. She's calling back. She has an address where people can drop off personal protective equipment for healthcare workers. Karen, do we have Karen?
We don't have Karen, but she gave us the address real quick of where people can do that. It's at 501 Southeast Hawthorne, loading dock on 6th, and then 1300 Southeast Gideon from 12 to 4. People can drop off donations of PPE.
That's great.
Oh, that's
awesome. Can you repeat those addresses again?
501 Southeast Hawthorne on loading dock on 6th, and then the other location is 1300 Southeast Gideon.
Great. Well,
okay.
Hey, how long do you think we're going to have to be doing the show like this?
I don't know, but you guys got to wrap it up in a minute, so you only got one more minute for today at least.
All right, everybody, shelter in place. Use your head. Listen to the news. Don't believe the idiot in charge. And, you know, we're going to get through this, but we're going to get through this by being intelligent and sharing and helping, but not sheltering in place.
And call your senators, call your representatives, write to them, put pressure on them to help out workers and not the ownership class.
Really?
Absolutely. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program.
It has.
Please stay healthy. Please stay safe. Please stay home. And we'll be back at you next week. From the war against disorder, from the sirens, baby.
crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
And you are tuned into KBOO Community Radio. Coming up at 9 a.m. is Alternative Radio. Well, they'll be also talking about, well, the thing that's in the news these days, the coronavirus. KBOO Community Radio is currently closed to all in-station and volunteer and visitor activity for the next 30 days due to the COVID-19 pandemic, effective March 13th. And while our airwaves are still very much alive, all in-station classes and meetings are canceled for this month. However, we are conducting meetings via Zoom. So check out our website to find out that schedule and to get that Zoom link at kboo.fm. My name is Jenny Yokoyama. I am your board op for this morning. I'm also one of your interim station co-managers, and I just want to give a big thank you once again to all of our volunteers who are sheltering in place but still producing their programs at home just for you, just like we heard this morning on Abe and Joe Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Abe and Joe, for calling in and doing all the different things to try to figure out how we do all of this.